Hoodoo plant mamas, get your soul fed and your spirit red.
This here ain't no trend. I possess the power from way back when folk were stripped from all of their kin, so they had to find the magic within.
So I got on my
ancestors and gather my herbs. I conjure at my altar. Hoodoo plant mama, I manifest growth and I release trauma.
Child, we just out here trying to water our plants and mind our business, you know? Everybody from the deep south, man, everybody can have culture like us.
Welcome everyone to the show. Thank you so much for joining us again today. We are focusing the show on finding God through nature, through our connections with our plants and that kind of thing. And it is inspired by a book that I will tell y'all about in a little bit. But before we get started, let's go ahead and do a check-in. So how are you doing today, Leah?
So I'm doing pretty good. Something I've noticed is that being unemployed, this is probably my most productive unemployment, and I don't know if productive is the word that I should be using, but so something that I've been trying to do a lot of is write and rest and kind of challenge my idea of what productivity is, because I feel like, you know, when I write, I'm supposed to be writing 8 hours a day, and if I'm not writing 8 hours a day, you know, I can't call myself a writer. But then it's also like, if I don't get sleep, if I don't eat, if I don't take care of myself, I can't do the things that I need to do to be successful. So I'm trying to challenge this idea of, you know, what is productivity and what is being successful and how much work is enough work, and kind of balance work and rest. So a lot of what my day looks like is in the morning, I am usually working on writing stuff that's revising or applications or stuff like that. Usually in the afternoon, I'm taking a nap. And then in the evening, I do writing group with my friend. And so we work on our manuscripts. But I know you've talked about being unemployed before, but usually when I'm unemployed, I'm like sitting in my house depressed, feeling like I'm worthless because I don't have a job. But this has been like the most rewarding, and that's weird to say considering everything that's going on in the world, it's been the most rewarding unemployment that I've ever had. So that's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I am okay. I'm in the middle of finals week, so I'm a little like scatterbrained. I turned in a paper yesterday. I got another one due tomorrow. And then I have another one due in like a week. So I am tired and ready for a break. But yeah, and for sure, I definitely know that feeling of being unemployed and feeling useless. So I'm really glad that you are not in that space. That's such an unhealthy space to be in. And it's really just kind of connected to our investment in capitalism and the scam of productivity. So it is good to be released from that bondage. So yeah. All right. So let's get into some gratitude. What are you thankful for today?
I want to say that I'm grateful for nature. And I know we're going to talk about that today. Because anytime that I just feel like I need a reset, like I can just go outside for an hour or two and just find inspiration and find peace and find comfort. So I'm grateful for that.
Today, I am grateful for waking up this morning. I had so much trouble getting to sleep. That feeling of just like, am I ever going to get to sleep? And then getting to sleep and waking up the next morning is just a different kind of feeling. But you know, I've been super isolated and I haven't seen my grandma in a really long time. So a small group of us, I convinced them to come to my place. It'll be like five of us are going to do dinner. And so I'm really looking forward to that because I really need my family right now. I'm just It's just been really hard because I have been doing everything right as far as this pandemic, but it's just been a lot on my mental health. And so, I'm thankful that my family is going to be here soon. I'm already making plans to clean and play gospel music and make sure my ancestors in the room, even though my family don't know nothing about my altar, but you know, grandmama and them going to be there. Little do they know. So, but yeah. So the inspiration for the show today is from Alice Walker's The Color Purple. I'm sure some of you that listen to the show have read this book or at least know of it. And it was inspired by a conversation between Seeley. I always pronounce Seeley's name wrong. I have been calling her Seeley for a long time because I'm country. But Seeley and Suge. And so before we kind of jump into the conversation, I want to read y'all like a small kind of, it's broken up into sections, but I'm going to read an excerpt. So if you have this book, I have a paperback edition, 2004, I think is the year this edition was published, on page 194 and 195 for people that have the book, just if you want to follow along. To preface this excerpt that I'm going to read, if you've read the book, Seeley, the form of the book is basically Seeley writing letters to God, telling God about all this stuff happening to her life throughout the book. But there's a certain point where she stops writing to God and she starts writing to her sister. I won't do a spoiler in case you haven't read it, but something happens with Seeley, like her entire life gets turned upside down, and she loses faith in the God that she had always known. And so her and Suge are having a conversation, and it comes out that Seeley's image of God is basically this big, old, tall, gray bearded white man dressed in all white. And so this gets them into a conversation about God and who is God. And so I'm going to start here with Suge and their conversation. "Here's the thing," say Suge. "The thing I believe, God is inside you and inside everybody else. You come into the world with God, but only them that search for it inside find it. And sometimes it just manifests itself, even if you're not looking or don't know what you're looking for. Trouble do it for most folks, I think. Sorrow, Lord, feeling like shit." I'm going to skip on down. As if y'all can see me skipping down. "I believe God is everything," say Suge. "Everything that is or ever was or ever will be. And when you can feel it and be happy to feel that, you found it." She say, "My first step from the old white man was trees, then air, then birds, then other people. But one day when I was sitting quiet and feeling like a motherless child, which I was, it come to me. That feeling of being part of everything, not separate at all. I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed. And I laughed and I cried and I run all around the house. I knew just what it was. In fact, when it happened, you can't miss it." So I get chills reading that because I connected to that so much. And I read this book when I was super young, but I don't even remember that. And, you know, I used to just read books I found on my grandma's shelf, but I did not remember reading that. And then reading it again as an adult, I was like, damn, I feel like that was me, minus the running around part. And so I also connected with the part where she said a lot of people find it in sorrow. And when I really start feeling like pulled or drawn to the trees, drawn to nature, I was in like a super bad, bad place, you know? And I feel like when I started to understand myself connected to these trees and the grass and the fucking ocean, like it really did help me like want to be alive and want to keep going. So, but I really want to start off the conversation and think back to this image of God that we grow up with. So I'll start with you, Leah, because I've been talking enough. How did you view God growing up? And then when did, if a shift even had to happen, but growing up, how did you view, what was your image, visual image of God? And then how did that change?
So I'm going to say when I was younger, I agreed with Celie about what God looked like. Even though I lived in a Black community, I went to a Black church, and people would have like pictures of Black Jesus, but still it was like in my head, God was this white man who was basically like a thinner Santa Claus. He wasn't real thin, but he was kind of thick, you know? Santa Claus with like a white beard who wore white and was in the sky. And I think as I've gotten older, I found that definition of God to be limiting. I don't know when the shift happened, maybe in the past few years, but I found that I always thought of God as like this white man in the sky just looking over Earth. And it always like messed with my brain because I'm like, the idea that God, or the idea of God, wasn't big enough for the universe, wasn't big enough to explain like extraterrestrial life forms or the other planets or all these things. So I think for me, I don't mind people using the language of God, but I don't really use that anymore. I use it when other people use it because that's what they're familiar with. And I don't mind the term, but in my head, which I know is my problem, something I need to work on, in my head, anytime I say God, I still think of a white man looking over Earth in the sky.
That's real. And I think I didn't know the difference between God and Jesus too. So you grew up in church and who Jesus, you know, even Black churches, they got that picture of Jesus with long, like, brunette hair and this white, regular looking white blue man eyes. With long hair. Yeah. And even though I've heard Black people, I've heard my grandma talk about how, well, the Bible says Jesus had hair of wool and his feet was like this, but there still seems to be this disconnect, because then why do we have a white Jesus hanging up in the church, you know? And I think that confuses children. I'll say, I feel like I definitely had an image of God as a white man. But then at some point, God, I think in the same way as you, became too big to put into a person. And for me in church, I actually listened in church. This is why I asked a lot of questions. I started like understanding the difference between the Spirit, the Son, the Spirit, the Holy Ghost, like. And I remember it being explained that God is a spirit, and Jesus is God in human form. I don't remember who told me this. And so I started understanding God as sort of like a spirit. And so the image of a human just went away. And I just started thinking of God as just like this, I don't know, you can imagine like this white mist just floating. That's how I started seeing God. But yeah, and so as I've gotten older and life just started lifing, I have started to connect God or the universe or whatever people want to call it to all of these beautiful, naturally occurring things that are coming from the earth or that are a part of the earth. And I feel like it happened when I was at my like lowest moment. So I do want to go back to what, well, I feel like we cite the Bible right now with the color purple, but I want to go back to what Suge said about my first step from the old white man was the trees. That just, then the air, then birds, then other people. It is something about trees, and I don't know if you feel this way, Leah, but I feel like, and I feel like a spiritualist, maybe on Twitter, and maybe something I've seen on Instagram was talking about this recently. I feel like the trees be speaking, like be communicating with us in like some way. And I definitely think that's connected to me being drawn to like plants, like, which happened out of nowhere, TBH. So I was really thinking a lot about how she said it started with the trees. And just the fact that, like, this is so, like, let me not go out hotel, but the fact that the trees used to be weaponized against us, like, we used to, like, lynchings and trees and that whole ritual, like, I think a lot about, like, the spirits connected to trees and just all the violence trees have seen because they live so long. They live so long and they witness so many things. And I've gotten to the place where it just feels like violent when people wipe out forest and that kind of thing. It just seems super violent. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I was really stuck on the idea that she said first the trees. You know, this book is set in like the early 1900s, I think. Lord, let me not get to lying, but it's definitely back during the times where like a black person could easily get lynched. And so the fact that during this time period where this was actively happening, she says the trees were her first step from the white man, or this image of a white man as God.
Okay. What I was thinking about was lately, I would say over the past few years, my poetry writing has kind of shifted to talking about nature. And I don't even know where it started, but something that is recurring is trees. Like, I remember seeing this. I went to work one day and I saw a possum or some kind of roadkill that was there. I came back to work, it was gone. And it reminded me of being in Mississippi. I'm like, they let the dead sit there forever. And something that was like circling around my head for like days was they hang our dead from trees. And then I thought about how trees hold the memory of this violence. Because people always talk about when you cut a tree, you can see how old it is by how many rings. So I was really interested in how trees hold violence. A lot of them have been burned, cut, all of these things. And even with cutting land down, I remember just how distressed I was because the road near me, they are widening it and they cut down like miles of trees. And my first thought is like, you know, if something comes through here, it's going to destroy everything. Because you took down our last sort of defense or protection against storms. And I was thinking about this idea of balance too, because most of the time when people cut down trees, when they clear lands, they don't put anything back that's going to, they don't give back to the earth basically. And the earth kind of requires this balance of give and take. So even with trees,
just this process of going from the trees, then air, then birds, then other people. And you know this, that I put up this whole Facebook post about people thinking about God in human terms. And I think it's super relevant that people are the last thing that she mentioned, because I think one of the ways that, so let me also add, I know for myself, I am coming from a Christian background. I grew up Christian. Some of that is still in me, although I do not at this point identify as Christian. When I think about Christianity and the way that the idea of God, or God as this man being weaponized against people, I think about the ways that people are basically putting God on the footing with humans. So I think a lot about, particularly when people were protesting gay marriage, and they would say, you know, they would have these signs saying God hates gays or God hates this. Even back in the day, saying God hates fucking integration, like the ways God has been used against marginalized folks or folks that are seen as like deviant. It is extremely violent, but it is also extremely like arrogant to put God on equal footing with you, with the human part of you that is compelled to want to ostracize people who are different from you, who you feel like are not normal. And what is normal? You know, we ain't got to get too deep, but a part of me, and we can talk about this a little later too, is decolonizing the way I think about God is a part of me getting free and me loving and treating myself better. Like, when you have a God that, you know, apparently does not love gay people, or what Christians like to say, love the person, hate the sin. No, that God hates my queerness. That God hates me because I am a queer person. Ain't no, what is the sin about my existence? When you say that God requires women to submit to men, even in the face of violence, I have heard of women being in abusive relationships and them getting canceled by pastors to work it out. Infidelity. I'm sorry, that is abuse. And you don't want to call it that, but that is abuse. Like, all of these different ways that God is weaponized to oppress against us. That is a human conception of God, in my opinion. And so that's what really this book, like, Alice Walker does a lot with The Color Purple, but that particular scene just really resonated with me and really, I don't know, it kind of affirmed my journey with understanding God in a different way. So before we take a break, did you want to add anything else, Leah?
I wanted to think about this idea of her journeying from God to trees and God to air, because I think it's a lot easier to see God in nature, because unlike people, nature's not constantly arguing with you or fighting back against you or all of these things. So it's easy to like look at nature and just marvel, because it's like, how does a tree grow? I took science class, so I know like science-wise, but it's just, how are forests made? How does the clouds move in the sky? Like, how do all of these things happen? And it's easy to marvel at that and look at and acknowledge that God exists in that, because in a way, that's our way of explaining something that we don't really have a good explanation for. I understand science is an explanation, but still, as someone who wanted to major in science, I'm still like, okay, but how? But I think about how she saw God in people last. And I think maybe some of that had to do with how we don't see God in ourselves. So it's hard for other people to see God in us.
No, I connect with that. And I also think that when we become connected to nature, she talked about when cutting down a tree, she feels like that's basically her arm that got cut. When we start to see ourselves as a part of nature, as something that is innate to this world, we also see other people in that way. I think it humanizes other people to us. Like it, I don't know, like, how can you not love? Like, how can loving people, obviously not people that harm you, but how can loving people not be necessary and easy for you? When you see that just like you are a part of this world, I'm a part of this world, and we are connected. We are connected to each other as much as we are connected to the trees, you know, and as much as the trees are connected to each other and that kind of thing. So, yeah, no, I definitely see what you mean. Well, all right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll get back to the show. All right, y'all, there are a number of ways that you can support our podcast. First and foremost, the non-monetary ways. Follow us on Twitter at Hoodoo Plants and Instagram at Hoodoo Plant Mamas. Please feel free to tag us. If something resonates with you, let us know. For monetary donations, you can join our Patreon, where we offer exclusive content like mini-sodes, tarot readings, and answers to your plant questions. You can also drop a donation on Cash App or PayPal. Any amount is appreciated.
We also wanted to take this time out to thank our new patrons, Kimberly and Kiki. Kiki wrote us, "I just discovered your podcast today and I love it." Thank you, Kiki. Also, thank you to Anita for giving us a little sum-sum on the Cash App. Anyway, let's get back to the show. Okay, so for the second half of the show, we wanted to talk a little bit about our journeys with nature, kind of coming to nature, finding God, finding comfort in nature. I'll go first. I wrote about, this was a couple years ago, I wrote about kind of how hard of a transition it was for me to be in predominantly white spaces. Because I was in my gifted and talented program. I was one of only two Black kids in that program. And it was an adjustment. And I didn't really find comfort in anywhere I went. Because I felt like for that program, I was being told to change who I was to fit in, to stay. And I didn't want to do that. So I went, I complained to my mother. I complained to my grandma, who were just kind of like, it's an honor to be in this kind of space and you need to do whatever you can to stay there. And so in order to be there, I felt like I had to shape shift and be one person for school, one person for home. And that's a lot to ask of a 7-year-old. And it was very hard for me. Also around that time, or I think it was like a year or two before then, we had moved to the country. And so around the time that I was being asked to be everything for everybody was also around the time that I spent a lot of time outside. I got a dog. Her name was Princess. and we would just go on adventures together. We would roam the forest. We would make like mud pies and soup out of like grass and rainwater. And I would just sit outside for hours talking. I didn't even know who I was talking to, but I was out there talking and I was finding answers. I was finding comfort. I think the thing that helped me was when I was outside in nature, it wasn't demanding anything of me. It wasn't demanding that I act one way or I talk another. It was just accepting of who I was at that moment, and I wanted more of it. And that's probably why when I was younger, I walked through the forest barefoot, because adult me is a little scared. There are alligators out there. There are Burmese pythons.
As children, we are fearless. I feel like it was a lot of shit I did as a kid. Like, when, not at this age.
So, yeah, that was, I think for me too, I always wonder, was I being courageous or was I just desperate for a kind of a place of belonging and a place where I felt like I fit in? And I'm still questioning that now, because like now as an adult, I'm in therapy and my therapists are like, you're doing the work that people twice your age do. And I'm like, and they call me courageous, but I was like, am I courageous or am I just tired of suffering and I just want to be better? So I'm still not sure like what drew me to nature. Was it desperation? Was it courage? But I think a lot of it was just a desire to exist, a desire to be and not have things demanded of me. And that's what I found in nature. So, yeah.
That's interesting. You know, so I'll say when I was younger, the natural world was kind of terrifying to me. So thunderstorms, I mean, now I listen to thunderstorms on fucking Spotify when I need to relax. But when I say that I used to tremble, I was so afraid of thunder and lightning. Well, I'm mostly afraid of thunder. You know, even the woods, like the forest, there was this, this, when I was deep in the country, when I was younger, I grew up in the country, but there was a part of my life where I was in like rural, Mississippi, part of Mississippi. And there were parts of the forest that just like made my stomach sink. Cause it would, I don't know if you know, some people call them sunken roads, but it's like when there's trees, but then you walk to a certain point and then it just dips down into like a, I can't even describe it. But it just, it sinks down and it's like the trees are like lower in the ground, like a mountain. It almost feels like you're on a mountain. Maybe it's comparable to hollers in Appalachian. Lord, y'all don't drag me. I don't know how to pronounce it. But maybe it's comparable to those. I don't know. But that used to scare me. And like, I don't know. There was a point where like when I was outside with my cousins and stuff, you know, I liked ladybugs. I did like worms at one point. But there was something about what my grandma used to call, because she said her mother called it God's work. I was just like, I felt so powerless because it was something I couldn't control and it was something happening in the sky and that kind of thing. So that was a strange aspect of nature, just like trees and animals. Like, it was scary.
I think it's interesting that you were like afraid of it, because I was always fascinated by it. I remember like something that stayed in my head was, it was like 12, like midnight, and it was dark, and it was like this rolling lightning in the sky, and I was like, oh my god, what's going on? And anytime like thunderstorms were exciting. Maybe I was a weird child. But yeah, it was just like nature was always fascinating and inspiring. I wasn't really afraid of it as a child as I am now. Now I'm like, you know, there are things out there that could eat me. But yeah, nature was inspiring.
Well, I really want to talk about, and I think we both had similar experiences, like this kind of growing up. So me and Leah are both in our mid to late 20s. And so I feel like it's safe to say we're both kind of, you know, new to the job market. Like, obviously we've both been working likely all of our 20s, but like new to like this adulthood where you got rent, you got bills and all these different things, and you are just like doing life. And so for me, I went to undergrad. I did a year of AmeriCorps, went into grad school. Mind you, even when I was in AmeriCorps, I was taking classes for free. So I was still kind of in school. After I got my graduate degree, I was just hell bent on getting out of Mississippi. So fast forward, I moved, to New Orleans, and that didn't work out with the job I got there. So I had to move back home, and I was basically unemployed for like, what, maybe between 7 to 8 months. Y'all, when I tell you, I had never been that depressed in my life. And it was a different type of depression, because as a kid, I was a very like sad kid. But at this point in my life, and I guess I'll just put in a trigger warning, trigger warning suicide. So, when I was at home, this was the first time where I felt like I did not want to be alive. Like, I really was like, you know, thinking about like, why I don't deserve to be alive, and I'm a failure. And I had been working so hard to get out of Mississippi and get away from home, and all of my worst fears had happened. I was back in my grandma's house. I was back in my little small town, and I couldn't find a job. And so during this time, I was having like these weird daydreams. I call them daydreams. They weren't like dreams, but they were definitely dreams that were not really in my control. I started like just having these daydreams to like disconnect myself from the present, of just like oceans, like the ocean, or like I started an essay about this, which is so weird. I used to imagine myself falling deep into the ocean. It's like this sort of death. So I was daydreaming about dying, and I was daydreaming about being taken by the ocean. And also during that time, I started just like going outside. I felt like something was calling me outside, and I started noticing that around my grandma's house, there were like these beautiful purple wildflowers, and one day a random patch of like fucking, what are they? Are they daffodils or daisies? Another type of weed, but they're very pretty. Just like sprouted up out of nowhere at a certain part of the yard. And I don't know, like the air just felt different. Like it felt like I was re-experiencing my home, like the natural aspects outside of the house, my home in a different way. And as much as I didn't want to be alive, it was something just pulling at me. And I remember, you know, this was a bad bout. It was to the point where I was thinking in my mind about like, well, when am I going to do it? Like, what should I do before I do it? Like, maybe I can like reconcile some things before but I don't want to be alive anymore. And it was something about experiencing the trees. Like, I just felt like the trees was performing for me. Like there was this random tree behind my grandma's house, beautiful pink flowers. I was like, where the fuck did this come from? I've never seen this. I grew up here. I've never seen a tree just pink like that. And I don't know, like to this day, I feel like the trees saved me. I feel like something in me was like, something outside of me was like, nah, we in this together. Like, all of this is connected to you. And I know that sounds super cheesy, but I had never felt like, you know, I don't see a future for myself. I had never been that close to like, I literally do not want to be alive. I've never been that close. And I feel like I was on the edge, and something outside of me out there in those woods where we live at grabbed me and said, no, this is also ancestral land. This is the land that so actually now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it's not a coincidence. My great grandmother had a garden out there. My great grandfather, that's where he farmed. That's where he did his, you know, grew his plants and his food and all of that. And so, I don't know. I feel like it was probably connected to that, but something grabbed a hold of me and said, you are not finished yet. So I'll stop there if you want to add and talk a little bit about that, because I know you dealt with unemployment, and then I'll talk about how I got to plants.
Okay. Maybe I'll do the bridge between unemployment and plants. So I graduated from college. I moved to Florida. I got my first full-time job. At that job, I experienced discrimination and harassment. And I just told myself, you know, if I just work harder, it'll get better. It didn't get better. I got worse. So I had to leave that job. And in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm going to find a new job easy, because I found that job really quickly. It wasn't a good job, but I found it quickly. So I was like, I'll get hired easily. I can go ahead and quit this job, even though I don't have another one lined up. But it was to a point where that job got so bad, I had to go see a therapist. That therapist was saying like, and not only the therapist, it was like all of my friends, my family, they were all like, you need to leave this place. It's not good for you. But I was determined to like stay at my first full-time job out of college for a year. I didn't make it. And so I ended up unemployed. I thought it was only going to be maybe a month or two and then I'll find a new job. And it ended up being 6 months. And so over that time, it was just me. Like, I spent hours on my resume, hours on interviews, driving all over the place trying to get a job, and no one hired me. Something I got a lot, which now I realize is racist. I got that I'm not a good culture fit. It was never like, you're not qualified or any of this. It was like, you're not a good culture fit. And I was like, what the fuck does that even mean? But now I realize it was like, I was going to a place that had all white people and they had never worked with a black person before. So I was like, okay. But it did wear down on me. Like, all of that hard work and rejection wore down on me and I felt worthless. I felt like I wasn't good at anything. I was never going to find a job. No one was ever going to hire me. I made this big risk by moving to another state and it wasn't paying off. And so something must have been wrong with me. And so during that time, I made a trip back to Mississippi and I saw one of my friends and she had a house full of plants and she sent me home with some plants and they were like, hey, they're probably not all gonna grow, but if you want to practice, they gave me like 8 spider plants and they all lived. And spider plants grow very quickly and they reproduce very quickly. So I went from having no plants to dozens of plants. But I just like kind of became obsessed with putting this thing in the soil, putting my hands in the soil, which feels so good, and smelling it and just watching this thing grow from this little tiny spiderette to this huge plant, and feeling for the first time feeling accomplished, feeling like, you know, I can create something good in this world with my own two hands. And just it, like, for me, plants gave me that confidence. It gave me that spirit of worthiness. And it made me feel like I could do something bigger than a job or even better than a job. So I think for me, plants just kind of filled a void that just going out into this white racist world took away from me.
Yeah, and I see plants as an extension of nature, a part of nature that we bring into our homes. And so my OG plant is Bonquisha, Bonita. Those are all the names I call her. She is a bonsai. And I actually got her from Walmart, which is so crazy. I got her from Walmart probably back in 2017. So I've had her for 3 years and she's gotten big. But that was my first plant. And when I tell you, this plant has seen me through so much stuff. And this, I feel like I'll be sounding like a nerd, but Bonnie has demanded that I don't give up on myself. I remember I was going through a really bad depression in grad school. And I actually set her in the living room, like, first of all, no sunlight and nothing. I just was like, well, I'm just going to sit this here and just ward it when I can. And it got to the point where every time I walked by the plant, leaves would start falling. I swear, I would walk by and I would just say, oh my gosh. And so I finally put her back in my room and she was just there. Like, when I was laying in the bed crying or just like in this deep depression, I don't know. I would look at Bonnie and just be like, you're alive. You're alive. When I went down to New Orleans, part of my unemployment I spent in New Orleans and I was not leaving the house for nothing. I was just there. And my grandma would like send, no, I was living off my savings for a while. So I would go in my savings, get groceries, maybe eat once a day. I wasn't even watering Bonnie like that. And she was just there. And it's seriously, I would look at her and say, I'm alive. We're alive. Came back home. When I got back home, it's actually, you know, I set Bonnie in my grandma's kitchen. We have like some big, like those big long windows that like, basically like almost to the ceiling and then almost to the floor, and we get a lot of sunlight in the kitchen. And that's when Bonnie got like a growth spurt. Like she got huge in that house. But she was just there. Like that plant has been with me through so many things, reminding me that we are alive. Like we are alive. Look at this shit that you're going through. You're not even watering me, girl. But here I am. You're not even watering yourself. But look at you. We here. So after that, I don't know. All of a sudden, I just started getting more plants. People would give me plants. And my plants are still who I look to when I feel like, when I start slipping into that space where I don't want to be here. My plants, I think, have God in them. Like, I think plants are a form of God. And I look at my plants. I wake up to my plants. I got plants on my windowsill. First thing I see is plants and then the trees outside of my window. And it's really this reminder that, girl, it's another day. And you're going to get up and you're going to live regardless of what happens. And so to kind of wrap it up, all of this is connected to me decolonizing myself. When I think of God as these, just like all over these different, like these little versions of God, like plants, or these huge versions of God, trees, the ocean, that kind of thing. So yeah. So anyway, so one of the things I just wanted to leave us with was that a part of decolonizing how we imagine God, decolonizing in that you are not weaponizing God against people. The belief that some people are not worthy of God's love, the belief that some people are not worthy of existing, that is not of God. And we're not coming from a biblical perspective. But even if we were, I'm not sure where y'all find in the Bible that God hates certain people, or God wants people to be unhappy and miserable in the name of salvation. I feel more closer to fucking salvation now, Lord, I shouldn't be cursing, but than I ever have. And I think reimagining God helps us treat and love each other better. So I'll end on some questions that maybe you can ask yourself. Who is God beyond your fear? Who is God beyond our fear? Is your relationship to God fear-based? If we're made in God's image, what does that say about us? What does that say about other people? How could you even think that some people in their very essence are wrong or sin? Like, you know what I mean? How might connecting our livelihood to the natural world sustain us? Or how can it sustain us? And then how does it shape the way we view the world? Those are just some questions that came to mind in thinking about our conversation for this particular episode. And I don't know if you have any thoughts, Leah, about any of those questions I posed, or if you have, yeah. So,
I think the first question, who is God beyond our fear, is something I've really been trying to ask myself, because I think growing up, we always equated fear and love. Because you fear God, you love him. And so we see our parents as, you know, someone to fear, and that fear is love. But I'm trying to separate these two. And for me now as an adult, thinking about God, I think about the universe. You know, I think about this energy that moves throughout all of us. This energy that's moving planets along, this energy that it's cyclical in a sense. Something that I remember is Ecclesiastes chapter 3, to everything there's a time and a place for every season under the sun. And that's what I think about when I think about God, when I think about nature. Everything has its place. There's a spring, there's a winter. You know, we're going to have our dark times, we're going to have our good times. And I think a lot of it has to do with, and we talked about this in our November Patreon, but alignment. It's about getting in tune with the energy of the universe, getting in tune with the energy of nature. And that's how we find our true and authentic self, or maybe not even find, but get back in tune with it, because we are already our true and authentic self. I think a lot of times we kind of move away from it because of what the world tells us we need to be, instead of believing who we are ourselves. So I think it all goes back to that quote with Suge. It's, you don't have to go outside of yourself to find God. God is within you.
Yes, I love that. And I guess these are just those questions that I posed are kind of like things our listeners can think about. But also that first question, that was the first question that came to mind when, like, during this conversation, who is God beyond our fear? And we grow up, if you grew up in church, you grow up learning that God is a jealous God. God is a vengeful God. And so you're supposed to fear God and fear hell, which that's not, I don't have, you know, hell is not in my sphere of spiritual beliefs. Okay. First and foremost, but, aside from that, it doesn't feel healthy for me to fear God. And so, and also, you know, God, universe, whoever you acknowledge as a higher power, for me, I find safety in God. I find safety in these manifestations of God around my plants, the different tools that the herbal and spiritual tools that I use to protect my home are of God. They're from God. They're from nature. So I cannot fear something that I feel safe with. And my decolonizing this idea of this fearful God, of being afraid of God, of believing that God won't love certain parts of me, that was not rooted in a good place. And so feeling safe with God does not leave room for fear for me. It just does not. And so I hope that if you're listening, and maybe if this is something you're struggling with, I hope that you can reimagine, regardless. And I hope that we have Christians listening to this. Like, if you're a Christian, you can continue to be Christian, because this isn't the point of this conversation, is to like say you shouldn't be Christian. It's to say, like, is your conception of God human, based on human terms, or is it something that is spiritual and bigger than all of us, something that we are all connected with? And if it is rooted in human shenanigans, then how can you feel safe? How can you feel safe with that idea of God? Things that we project are human biases on, you know? So yeah, that's all I got for this. I just want us to get free and stop lying on God. That's all.
Amen.
So Leah, do you have any final thoughts before we officially end? I feel like I said earlier, okay, we're gonna wrap up, and then we started talking again, but do you have any final thoughts?
I think that's all I have. Like, I guess to wrap up, because I did talk about God being an energy, but I think as an adult, I don't think of God as gendered. I don't think of God as racialized. I think of God as kind of beyond that, or not thinking about small things, like, or even thinking, like I said earlier, I think of God as an energy that can move through all of us, that moves through this world and through the universe.
Yes, I love that. I agree. Yeah, well, thank y'all for making it this far from us. Again, if you like this podcast, make sure you like, rate, and review Hoodoo Plant Mamas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever streaming platform you use. Give us those 5 stars. And y'all, please feel free to tag us. Like, when if we say something that you was like, yes, ma'am, you know, tag us and let us know. We want to know. We want to know when it resonates.
Share our podcast with your friends. Tell someone about us. Follow us on Twitter at Hoodoo Plants and Instagram at Hoodoo Plant Mamas. And for our next episode, it will be the last episode of our season. So if you have any lingering questions you want to ask, email us at hoodooplantmamas@gmail.com. And we'll be sure to answer your questions for our last episode.
Yes, and we'll probably on our Instagram, maybe we can do like a question box for people that are just not going to take the time to email us, which is fine. We'll make it as easy as possible. But yes, so we will see y'all in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. This show was created and produced by a Black girl named Danny and a Black girl named Leah. Our music was produced by a Black girl named Tasha. Hoodoo Plant Mamas, y'all be blessed.